Force this committee to order. The time is 1:03 p.m. We are going to try and fit in what we can here before we have to go back to the floor. Members present at this time, Representative Justin Parrish, Representative Dave Tallarico, Representative George Rauscher, Vice Chair Representative John Lincoln, Co-Chair Representative Andy Josephson, and myself, Representative Tarr. Please let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business. Helping us out today is Ms. Tillinghast. Thank you so much. And our LIO moderator, Max Stanley. Appreciate your help with our meeting today. We have largely canceled the items for today's meeting with the exception of House Bill 354, Dye Fishery Assessments. This is the first hearing for this bill. And what this allows us to do is all of the bills that were scheduled for today, now if we hear this bill, all of them will have at least had their first hearing, which puts us in a better position to take action at a future date. So that's why we wanted to keep this one on the calendar in the time that we have today. And then the other bills, I know there's been a lot of interest with HCR 23 as well as HB 315 and some amendments being drafted on that. So we'll need a little bit of time in committee to be able to get through the offering of amendments and the discussion and everything on those. And then 260 we had pulled off because we're trying to stay sort of in sync here. So I just wanted to give a little bit of an update on what was happening on all those other ones. But again, while we're going to do 354 today is because now HCR 23, HB 315, and HB 260 can all be brought up at a future date under bills previously scheduled or heard. So that way, if we can at least get this one through its first committee hearing, we have that opportunity with this bill as well. And that gives us a little flexibility with the weird schedule over the next couple days. So with that, are there any questions from committee members or comments? Okay, thank you. Then if we could please have Rep. Ortiz and his staff come up for House Bill 354.
Good afternoon, Madam Co-Chair and members of this esteemed committee. My name is Dan Ortiz. I represent District 36, Southern Southeast Alaska.
And for the record, my name is Liz Harfold, staff to Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, co-chairs and members of this committee, for agreeing to hear House Bill 354. It's an act relating to dye fishery management and assessment procedures. Madam Chair, this bill is necessary for the Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association, the only dive fishery association in the state regulated by AS 43.76.150-210, to amend the process undertaken to modify the tax on gooey ducks, sea cucumbers, sea urchin fisheries it represents. Madam Chair, each fishery can tax itself at a different rate. At present, under current policy, a majority of the permit holders are required to change an assessment tax. Many of the permits, and this is problematic because many of the permits are non-transferable, and less than half of the CFEC permit holders in these fisheries are actively participating in the said fisheries. Due to the low involvement of permit holders, a majority participation of permit holders is unrealistic. The proposed legislation allows for a change in assessment tax to be initiated by three-quarters of a vote from the Board of Directors, and the vote to accept the change passed with a majority vote of permit holders participating in the vote. So this is just it's a needed change in the process by which they can self-assess themselves or change in their self-assessment the amount that they're assessing each other. So I can maybe give a little bit more further explanation, and then I'm going to ask also that staff gives a little bit further explanation, that Liz gives a little bit further explanation as to why this bill is needed. But if we can just think about when these first permits were introduced, we had, and these permits were non-transferable, so we had a much bigger percentage of permit holders participating in the fishery at the time, and now 20 years later, 30 years later, there's less. Some of the folks that own those permits that are non-transferable have transitioned out, aged out, if you will, of the fishery, and so they're not participating in the regular activities of the fishery, which includes the voting process. And so, therefore, it's hard to get under the current rules that they're playing under. It's hard to get the vote threshold required to do any change in assessment and that kind of thing.
And let me just interject here that Representative Johnson joined us at 104 and Representative Birch has joined us at 108 for the record. And Representative Rauscher, I noticed you had a question. Do you want to hold for a moment or would you like to ask it at this time?
It actually pertains to what he just said.
Oh, sure.
It's just a question, a clarification. You said that it's the only dive fishery association in the state regulated by AS, blah, 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 blah. Are there others in the state that are not regulated by it? And I guess I don't understand dive fisheries that well enough to be able to say it any other way than the way I did.
Okay. Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association is the only regional dive fisheries association in the state, and they oversee all of the permit holders within Southeast Alaska. There may be a small sea cucumber fishery, say, up in Kodiak, but they would not fall underneath the jurisdiction of this regional dive fishery association.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, please continue.
Oh. Okay, thank you. And to continue on with what SARDFA is, it's a private nonprofit economic development organization representing the harvest divers, processors, and communities of Southeast Alaska. There's just shy of maybe about 400 permit holders, and this was established back in 1998 after the legislature created the framework to create a dive fisheries association. They are governed by a board of directors that makes up a good collection of different people within the industry, and how they work cooperatively with Fish and Game to develop their annual operating plan, which determines how the dive assessment, this self-imposed tax that we're talking about, will be spent. Without these taxes going into Fish and Game doesn't have the money to do the assessments to keep these fisheries open, or manage the fisheries, I should say. The assessment's collected by the Department of Revenue and then is passed along to Fish and Game. Anybody who is a dive fishery permit holder in Southeast Alaska belongs to SARDFA. And to elaborate on kind of the difficulties of having permit holders participate is the permit holders are the only ones that can be fishing. They can't just be standing on the boat letting somebody else do the diving for them. They're the ones physically having to get into the water with their hands to harvest sea cucumbers or gooey ducks. And so with the permits being non-transferable, as people maybe are getting older or less interested in diving, they can't pass those on. There are transferable permits within this industry, and they're being very actively fished, though. I also wanted to note that we have Phil Doherty, who is the co-executive director with the Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association, available to speak to, and he can definitely answer so many more of these questions. So that's what I have to say about Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fishery Association and this legislation. And again, what we're putting forward at this moment only affects this particular organization, and they're the ones that are encouraging us to move forward with this. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a couple questions from Representative Rauscher, then Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the Chair, just a quick question. Is a permit owned by a family or by a person only in a family? In other words, is a son, can he actually use that to vote or actually to use to bring in these types of products back out of the water and then utilize them for his family, or how does that work?
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, it is only the individual who is the permit holder. If it is a non-transferable permit, they are unable to pass it along to anybody else in their family or to sell it to anybody.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there any opposition to this? I mean, have you had anyone come out and say, I mean, is there any permit? I have no idea at all about this. And so I know sometimes, changing an election rule could make some people unhappy, I suppose, and I was just wondering if there's any...
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, that's a good question. I have not heard of one... There has not been one complaint or concern put forward to my office about this potential legislation, and it does seem unlikely that it would, you know, that we would see concern because, again, we're just dealing with a kind of an internal issue amongst the association itself, and the issue has been that as these permit holders, non-transferable permit holders have aged out of the fishery, they're just participating less in the fishery, and mm-hmm. they're participating less in the votes that relate to this particular issue. So.
Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and through the Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I've got a couple of questions. First, how many people are on the Board of Directors, and how are they selected?
That would be a good one for Mr. Doherty.
I'll hold it then for him, then, unless he's
Madam
available
Chair,
now.
Is you
he is on, and I just want to, because he was invited testimony, so before we go to him, are there any other questions for the bill sponsor or staff, Representative Birch?
Thank you, Madam Chair. What does this, I see it references a number of other fisheries. Is dive fishing permitted for, you know, crab and scallops? And I mean, can you free dive for any of that stuff, or is that permissible? Yes. Does this address any? Or is it all about the sea cucumbers or whatever?
Through the chair, Representative Birch, the Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association represents permit holders for sea cucumber, gooey duck, and urchin divers only.
Just okay. Great. Thank you.
Any other questions for the bill sponsor or his staff? Okay. Then let's go to the invited testimony. And just want to make folks aware, Phil Dory from the Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association is invited testimony. But after that, we also have Scott Kelly, the director of commercial fisheries, Alpheus Bullard from Ledge Legal, and then Mr. Alper here from the tax division available for questions. So if we need any of those folks to come up, then we can definitely do that. So let's go to Mr. Doherty first.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Phil Doherty. I live in Ketchikan, Alaska, and I am the co-executive director of the Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association and have been for the past 11 years. And I'd like to first off thank Representative Ortiz and Ms. Harpole for the time they have put in to this changing of our regulations. This was under our request, and the changes, and I can kind of answer one of the, there was a question earlier about any opposition to this, and there was also a question about how our board is set up, and I can maybe wrap up those two questions with one answer. The way we are set up, we have a 9-member board that represents several regions within Southeast Alaska, the Ketchikan area, Petersburg-Wrangell area, Prince Wales, Sitka. We also have an at-large in Southeast Alaska. We have an at-large in Washington State, since a number of divers are from out of state. We have a processor who sits on our board, and we also have a gentleman at this point in time that represents municipalities throughout Southeast Alaska. They are voted in on a majority vote of the permit holders. It's an active board. We meet 6 or 7 times a year. And then underneath our board, we have committees that help the board direct our fisheries and the direction of the association. We have a sea urchin fishery, a gooey duck clam fishery, and a sea cucumber fishery. The two most active committees are the gooey duck clam and the sea cucumber committee, and they have approximately 20 divers on the committee. So we're pretty well represented throughout the suite of the dive fisheries and the number of divers involved in the committees. And when we proposed this change in our regulations, we voted on it at the committee levels, And in both the Gooey Duck Committee and the Cucumber Committee, there were it was 100% in favor, working with Representative Ortiz to try and get this passed, and 100% of the board approved of this change to our regulation. So there is no opposition within the association, either through the committees or through divers who are not on the committees. I have not heard any opposition to this changing of our bylaws or our regulatory laws right now. Again, as Representative Ortiz has mentioned, what we're seeking to do is just make it a little bit easier for the association to vote on the assessment that we impose upon ourselves. Right now, there's a 7% assessment tax on Gooey Duck clams, a 5% assessment on sea cucumbers, and a 5% assessment on red sea urchins. This is an internal tax, but it's collected by the state, and these taxes are above and beyond the 3% fisheries assessment tax that's imposed on all the fisheries in the state of Alaska. What we do with that money, and it's based on the ex-vessel value of the product as it comes off the fishing boats and over the dock. It's collected just like the state fisheries tax is on the fish ticket. The money is taken out at that point in time. It goes to the Department of Revenue. And then at the end of the fiscal year, with the assessment tax in place, the Department of Revenue sends that money back to us. And normally you're talking the assessment tax and the sea cucumber and the Gooey Duck fishery is usually somewhere around $250,000 to $300,000 a year per fishery. And what we do with that money is we have an annual operating plan with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. We come up with what needs to get done for the future year for assessment work, for management work, and for research work. And then we give them the assessment money to the Fish and Game Department for both fisheries. And then the other big chunk of money that we spend, especially in the Gooey Duck fishery, is through the Department of Environmental Conservation. We need to do parallel shellfish poisoning, water quality testing, and arsenic testing for the Gooey Duck clams. That costs us $150,000 to $200,000 a year. The Gooey Duck assessment money for the department is about $80,000 a year, and we give the department about $80,000 to $90,000 a year out of our sea cucumber funds. And plus, we're actively involved in a sea cucumber enhancement project with the Alatec Shellfish Pride Hatchery, so that's where some of the other monies go to. And then, of course, some of the monies come back to the association to pay for the costs of the association. So, unfortunately, when we have put this, we did in the sea cucumber fishery try to change our assessment from 5% down to 3% a couple of years ago. We do have quite a bit of money in our sea cucumber funds, and we can definitely lower our assessment taxes and let the individual fishermen take more money home. But unfortunately, We needed 50% plus one vote to pass it, and we just couldn't get enough votes. There are a number of permits that are not active these days, although they are renewed every year, so they are in the CFEC database. So by regulation in the sea cucumber fishery, for example, there's about 300 and 26 permits. We needed a vote of a little over 150, and we just couldn't quite get there. So here you have fishermen trying to lower their own tax, and we just couldn't get enough latent permits, the owners of those latent permits interested enough to even vote, and that kind of killed lowering the tax in the sea cucumber fishery. This bill would, I think, drastically change that and make it a lot easier for the tax structure within the association to be changed. This change in the regulation would not affect anyone else in the state. It would not affect, there are no other dive associations in the state. We will always meet our obligations, our financial obligations to the state of Alaska through the Fish and Game Department and Department of Environmental Conservation. If we don't give them the money, we don't fish. But we do have enough money built up from the sea cucumber funds that we feel that we can lower our tax assessment there, not in the goody duck fishery, but in the sea cucumber fishery, and that would help the fishermen, as I said, bring money home and keep money in their pocket. So we very much support this bill. I don't think there's any opposition to it. As I said, it should not cost the state of Alaska a penny to push forward with this bill. And again, our thanks to Representative Ortiz and Ms. Harpole for all the help that they've given us on this. Madam Chair, thank you.
Thank you for your excellent testimony. And Representative Lincoln, did you have a question?
I missed the numbers on, you have 326 outstanding permits right now, is that right?
Yes, there's over 400 within the association, and I guess our association maybe is a little bit different, that as soon as you buy a CFEC card, I guess you're technically a part of the association. There's a little over 100, there's about 110 goody duck permits out there. Right now, about 70 goody duck divers actually fish, and there's over 300, I think there's 326 sea cucumber permits, and about 180 of them are actively fished.
I'm just curious, what's the cost to renew, if anything? I mean, are people just sitting on them and not using them, or do people kind of come in and out different years, or what's it take to renew?
Madam Chair, that's a good question. To renew them through CFEC for a sea cucumber permit is $75. So there's not a lot of cost involved in renewing your permit in the goody duck clam fishery. To renew it is $225,000. A sea cucumber permit today goes for about $32,000. A goody duck clam permit goes for about $60,000 to $65,000, depending on the year. So when these fisheries first started, a lot of people got in the water. They knew it was going to go limited entry. You know, it's one of the problems with the limited entry fishery at the very beginning. A lot of people try and get a permit, and if they didn't get enough points within the CFEC structure, then they got a non-transferable permit. This is not an easy fishery to stay in. I believe, as Ms. Harpole said, the permit holder is the diver. And as you get older, some of these guys just don't want, and women, I'm sorry, just don't want to get in the water anymore. But they do maintain their permit, and it's made it difficult for us to reach the majority vote, especially on our assessment tax, and that's why we're trying to lower the standards a little bit.
Another follow-up? No. Additional questions? Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair, I was just wondering, why do you think it is that they hang on to these permits if they're not going to utilize them anymore? Do you have any idea?
Through the Chair, I guess the answer to that would be on an individual fisherman's basis. It seems as if you have a non-transferable permit, if you're not going to fish again and you can't sell it, there seems to be little reason behind holding on to the permit. But, you know, who knows what will happen. You can transfer, do a medical transfer on a non-transferable permit, so maybe some of them, and there are permits that are used each year on a medical transfer. So perhaps some of them feel that if they get the opportunity to give their permit to someone else in a medical transfer, maybe they feel that somewhere down the road these non-transferable permits may be worth something. But I wish I had a better answer than that, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, is there a cost to transfer these over for a medical reason?
Through the Chair, I'm pretty familiar with CFEC regulations, and I do not believe there's a cost to medically transfer a permit over on an emergency basis. I think the paperwork is done with the state. I know at the Fish and Game Office here in town, you can go up and fill out the emergency transfer work, get it up to CFEC, and if it's approved, then the permit is transferred for at least that season. Madam Chair.
And one last follow-up. Mm-hmm, sure. Is there anything in this bill that just that speaks to these non-transferable permits which aren't being used at all, or is that just, I mean, we're not ending that program at all in this bill at all?
No.
No. Okay. Yeah, Madam Chair, I think Dan just answered. No, there's nothing in this regulation, unfortunately, that, from my point of view, that addresses the non-transferable permits. This 100% addresses just the standards in which we can conduct an election to change our assessment taxes, Madam Chair.
Which is basically your quorum.
Madam Chair, again, it wouldn't be necessarily a quorum. It would be a quorum. It would be 50% of the permit hold, 50% plus one of the permit holders, not a quorum of the board or a quorum of the committees. We would like to lower the bar, not 100%, but just we want to get good participation in an assessment tax change. We don't want to just do it willy-nilly and make it very, very easy to do. That's why we've said that we need at least a 75% percent of the board to approve it, and we also need at least 25% of the permit holders to approve a changing of the assessment. So we just don't want to make it easy to do, but we would like to lower the bar a little bit. Madam Chair.
I appreciate your testimony. Thank you very much.
Any other questions for the testifier? Okay, I have one. I'm just wondering if it's going to become an issue at some point if people hang on to these permits in terms of managing the fishery and they're hanging on to them and not using them. Is that something that your association is considering in terms of, you know, how to encourage transfers or is that having an impact on these fisheries at all or limiting opportunities for, say, new people who might want to get into those fisheries?
Madam Chair, we have worked with CFEC over the past few years to try and get a number of these latent permits retired completely. It used to be if you didn't pay for your permit, I believe it was every 2, might have been 5 years, and that permit was retired, but you could go back and renew it. We worked with CFEC to try and get some latent permits retired out of this fishery, and we were actually pretty successful. When these fisheries first became a limited entry fisheries back in the late 1990s, there was well over 450 permits, and so we're down now to about 350. So there have been about 100 non-transferable permits retired over the years. And we're also very actively seeking an internal buyback program, especially in the cucumber fishery. As I said, we do have some money in our funds, and we would like to see the number of permits reduced in the fisheries, and we are looking at different ways. As I said, one of the ways that we've been doing a lot of work on in the last 2 years is a private CFEC buyback program, and we are working with CFEC toward those lines. We've had a lot of conversation with them. We're trying to work out the details, but again, this bill here would not affect the number of permits in the fisheries. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And just as a follow-up to that, do you think that the number was set too high when the fishery was created, and so that's why we sort of see an imbalance between how many permits are out there and how many people are actually using their permit?
Yeah, Madam Chair, my opinion is that when I think limited entry has done very well for the state of Alaska, but it seemed as if when fisheries that were not limited and then people knew that they were going to be a limited entry fishery, they made a pretty good effort to get out on the water and harvest something so they could at least get a non-transferable permit, and I believe that's what happened in the dive fisheries. And yes, I believe, and I think most divers would agree that when it did go limited entry, that there were too many permits in the fisheries to begin with. Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. Any other questions for the testifier? Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Mr. Doherty, for your answer to my earlier question. And It sounds to me like at the time of the issuing of a fish ticket, you pay not only the 3% fisheries tax, but also this additional tax of 7% for geoducks or 5% for the other species, which results in $250,000 to $300,000 a year. Is that figure right?
Through the chair, yeah, that's right. It changes, obviously, from year to year. The guideline harvest level changes from year to year as the Fish and Game Department goes out and does the assessment work and sets the quota. Obviously, the ex-vessel value is going to change on a year-to-year basis based on the market. And so that's about what we get from each of the two fisheries. These, you know, if I might just, you know, kind of show you the importance of these fisheries. I know it's not really related to the bill here, but these two fisheries combined, the geoduck fishery and the cucumber fishery, generate somewhere between $10 and $12 million ex vessel value here in Southeast Alaska. So these are pretty important winter, late fall, wintertime fisheries in Southeast. There's probably not another fisheries right now that maybe the Dungeness crab fishery in some years, but these are probably the two most important wintertime fisheries in Southeast Alaska. Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Polo?
Sure.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You said also that you've got to pay for PSP and arsenic testing, arsenic in the case of geoducks, and also for the operation of the board itself. What's the average overall cost?
Madam Chair, if I can ask a clarifying question, do you mean overall for the whole association, where does all of our money go?
Follow up?
Sure.
So the overall, my ultimate question is there a level to which you could cut your taxes which would interfere with your ability to adequately fund the operation of the board and important testing like PSP and for arsenic?
Madam Chair, right. Our board, they do not receive any compensation for being on the board. So the monies that come into the association to help for the cost of administration, pay for my salary, rent on our building, you know, all of the bells and whistles that are attached to owning a building, phone, web, and all that good stuff, you know, and travel for myself and Kate, you know, that's usually about $200,000 a year. In the geoduck clam fishery, that's where most of our expenses occur. I said we spend somewhere between $150,000 and $200,000 on PSP, arsenic testing, and water quality testing, and then we pay the department about $80,000 a year to conduct the sea cucumber fisheries. If we did not have money to pay DEC or to pay the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, if we didn't have enough assessment money in the bank or we don't generate enough assessment money during that given year's fishery, then we would not have a fisheries or a reduced fisheries the following year. I hope that was your question. If not, I'll try to clarify, Madam Chair.
Follow?
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Doherty, for your answer. I think it was admirably thorough. So the takeaway for me was if there's not adequate money to be remitted to Fish and Game for the sake of doing PSP and arsenic testing and any other safety or health and safety testing, then in the following year the fishery would be limited by Fish and Game. Is that correct?
Through the chair again, correct. And just a real quick history: when these dive fisheries first started in the early 1990s, people were from down south mostly because they had these fisheries in Washington State and California. They knew there was a resource up here. They came up here. They started diving. They were getting permits through the department. They were getting permits through CFEC, but there were no regulations in place. There was no assessment of the population in place. And as the harvest grew over the years, the department became a little nervous that maybe the fisheries was getting out in front of the resource, and the department put put the brakes on the fisheries. They pretty much told the divers and the processors that, listen, we don't have any money to look at a big fisheries like this. It's going to take a whole bunch of divers and a boat, and it's going to take money to get these fisheries going, and we don't have that money. And so, come back when the divers can figure out how to pay for these fisheries. And that's exactly what they did. They went up to Juneau. They got this bill in place. They assessed themselves a tax, and that tax is turned into fisheries now that is usually somewhere between a $10 and $12 million fishery a year. Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any follow-up?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions for Mr. Daugherty? No. Okay, thank you so much for your great testimony. Appreciate it. And again, we do have Mr. Alper here if there are any questions, or Mr. Kelly online and Mr. Bullard online as well. Any questions for any of those individuals from committee members?
I have a question for Alper.
Okay. Mr. Alper, could you please come forward? And I guess we'll close public testimony right now. Pardon me. There's public testimony in the room. Mr. Alper. Let me do that first. Sorry, I didn't have you signed up. So.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Oh. My name is Jeremy Keane. I represent United Fishermen Alaska. SARFRA is a member of United Fishermen Alaska. And
Mr. McCune, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but just let me make it clear, because Mr. Daugherty was invited testimony, that we are in public testimony now.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm part of the public.
Yes, sorry.
Anyway, we support the bill. I think, they've struggled a little bit of lately. They've closed some beaches, and it's very, fisheries vary, as we all know. So I think they've built a pretty good record of the funds they do have in there that covers everything, and Phil did a real good job explaining that. So I think lowering their assessment, which is kind of based on the same as marketing, of the active permit holders, 51% would be a good change, and they could set their assessment, and the fishermen and the process and the state would make a little bit more money in the process. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. McCune? Representative Parrish, was that a...
No.
That was... Okay. I couldn't tell. Okay. Okay, to Mr. McCune. Representative Lincoln has a question. Oh. If you could come back, please.
this seems like a good bill and a decent solution to the problem, but I'm just wondering if you could describe... Is this preferable than addressing the root cause of the issue with having a lot of outstanding permits that just aren't being used? Or why is this approach preferable to trying to address the underlying cause of the problem?
To the chair, Representative Lincoln, when we get into CFC laws, that's totally different than what the bill is addressing. And the bill would address that the current permit holders that are taking part in the fishery would help the association and those fishermen. As far as latent permits, there's always there's a few fisheries in the state that do have latent permits. Those people, like in this case, I was talking about this earlier, that some of the divers I know have gotten old now, and it is a dangerous thing, and it's a little bit for the younger guy, not the guy that's 60, 70 years old diving. So that's a whole different issue that they can work with CFEC, and there is a threshold of permits, though, that have to remain in a fishery to make it limited entry. Okay. If you go too low, then that could be too exclusive. Limited entry has to have enough permits in a fishery to turn over every year so there can be new entry. So, but in some fisheries, when they created them, there was a little bit more available resource than there is today, and then they can always do what they call optimum number study to see what that fishery is producing and see how many participants should be in it, which gives the state a pretty good number, so that if somebody challenges that, which they did in the Sitka herring fishery, they challenged there wasn't enough permits, in the fishery, and then the court could say, well, look, they did an optimum number study, and this is how many are tuned to what the income is coming in. Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Follow up?
I don't know much about the commercial fisheries in general, so this is really interesting to me, you know, learn from me, but so would it ever be the case that an active permit user would benefit from having latent permit holders that have permits but don't use them because it inflates the numbers so that the fishing remains limited, and so, you know, the people that are out there using it kind of benefit from a more constrained sort of competition, or is that ever, you know, a possibility? Or
through the chair, Representative Lincoln, what happens is usually if you have a whole lot of latent permits, it's either due to the price or there hasn't been a lot of salmon showing up or whatever particular species you're going after. So the remaining people that are actually fishing benefit a lot from that. Now, in the Copper River fishery, which I fish, we don't have any latent permits. Everybody is fishing their permits because it's a very lucrative fishery, very good at the beginning. Prices are real high. Bristol Bay is kind of a full utilized fishery. But a lot of little fisheries, like the dive fishery, would be considered a little fishery. There is people that go and do other things, or it doesn't look very good for diving, so I'll just put it off this year. You have to renew your permit every 2 years to retain your permit, or that permit goes away in any particular fishery you're in. If you're not fishing, you have to renew it every 2 years. You can get 1 year off, you know, because you're not taking part in the fishery. But anyway, that's how it works. I mean, the latent permits help the remaining guys in the fishery probably make a little bit more money.
Yeah.
You're
good?
It's a little difficult.
Maybe we should have a one-on-one.
It's a whole different conversation, Madam Chair, CFC permits. Mm-hmm. But I will come and talk to you about it.
Yeah, no, thank you. I just didn't want to take everybody else's time for fishing 101 for me.
Thank you. So I don't have anyone else, I don't think, unless there's anyone else in the room signed up for public testimony. I don't see any else online, so I will close public testimony at this time. You're good? Okay. And then we'll make one last call for the folks that are in the room. Mr. Alper, I think we have lost Mr. Kelly, but we also have Mr. Bullard from Ledge Legal. So any questions for any of those folks? Okay. Seeing none, then what we're going to do with this bill is set it aside. We will send out the amendment deadline by email because the schedule is a little bit uncertain now based on what's happening with the operating budget. And so we just need to sort of like regroup to try and catch up with all the things that we haven't been able to work through this week. So we're going to set this aside. We'll let folks know. We'll either be trying to bring it up maybe Friday or Monday, depending on how we can work the other items in. And so if there's no other business to come before the committee, then we will adjourn at 1:46 p.m. to go back to the floor at 2 p.m. Thank you.